This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashrin Johan. The opposition, Pakatan Harapan, faced another thumping defeat, this time at the Johor state elections. Not only that, some experts have pointed to opposition's inability to mobilize a lot of their base or Johorians in general to go out and vote due to various reasons. It's also the feeling that opposition appears slightly detached from the reality or going-ons on the ground, unable to fight for what people really want. What do we do about this exactly? Joining me on the show today to discuss all of this and more is Nathaniel Tan. He's a columnist as well as part of the Project Bangsa Malaysia group. Welcome to the show, Nat. How are you doing?
Thanks so much, Dash. I'm doing okay. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You recently wrote an article on Malaysia Kini. It's one of your columns, and you wrote an article titled, Will the Opposition Evolve or Die? Could you summarize it briefly for us, and what inspired you to write this piece?
So I have a lot of friends in opposition parties, people I respect and love and always will. So nothing of what I say, you know, criticism and such like that, is, nothing of it comes from a place of malice or hate. I hope it comes from a place of love. You know, so I think the problem faced by the opposition mirrors the problem faced by Malaysian politics and society as a whole. I like to think of it as the great Malaysian script, where all of us are given a role to play, lines to read, and so on. Now, the most important thing to understand about the script is that it is extremely difficult to change. So let's say around 1957, it was decided that our politics would be race-based, and all our politicians' lines in this script would thus be heavily racialized. 65 years later, an entire lifetime, this continues to be the case. And if you go even further back, centuries ago perhaps, it was decided that in the Westminster system script, all government MPs must support the government and all opposition MPs must oppose the government, right? So in this script, so when DAP is in government, it is moderate. When it is in opposition, it is radical. Same for MCA, right? And when PAS is in opposition, the country is never Islamic enough. When PAS is in government, you suddenly find it is PKR MPs who are bringing up things like Timah Whiskey in parliament, basically accusing the government of not being Islamic enough. So how people act and talk are determined entirely by the role that they are assigned in this script. The actors may swap roles from time to time, but the script remains the same. Since this is BFM, you know, business, and right, we can maybe further use the term range bound.
Right.
Actors in this script always act within a certain range or comfort zone and very rarely go beyond it, right? This range, again, defined by the script. So if this theory is correct, even though PH suffered a massive defeat in Johor and Malacca before it, I don't think we'll see any seriously dynamic innovation or change coming from the opposition or from any other political party for that matter right now. You see, all of them recognize that there is a need for big change, but they won't really be willing to change themselves in a big way, right? Maybe sometimes even if they want to. It's basically institutional and cultural inertia is too big for major change to come from within any major political party. I feel they are range bound by a particular way of doing things, and going outside their comfort zone is extremely unlikely to happen, right? I think the news today is just people talking about a Pakatan Harapan retreat, or we're going to get together, find out what we're wrong and come up with something. I mean, the intent is good. I understand that, you know, they know something needs to change, but it tends to work out that at the end of this kind of retreats, they'll come out and they'll say things that are roughly the same as they've been saying for many years, right? And, you know, I think this will be the case even if they replace the majority of the leaders. Everyone starts talking about we need new blood, we need change, you know, leaders need to change. I think this nonstop debate about whether leaders should be replaced and who they should be replaced with is kind of one of the most boring red herrings to discuss. You could probably shuffle most of today's existing leaders. You could even shuffle them between parties for the little that matters and still end up with the main script generally unchanged.
So what you're saying is very interesting, right? Because you're saying there's a script and that script barely changes. You brought up some good points about how parties tend to be come off, you know, more radical or more pro-rakyat in that sense when they're opposition. And then once they go to a government, it feels a lot of times like status quo. So with that in mind, as it stands, do regular people actually have the power to decide the political outcomes of our country?
Yeah, so I definitely believe that people have the power to shape the future of Malaysia. I have complete faith in that. That's one thing, right? But to answer your question in a sort of more technical way, you know, like, do we have the power to decide for certain political outcomes, right? So here here again, my answer would be, we have minimal impact on a number of things in the political process. We have some limited control over who gets elected. Obviously, right? We vote and, you know, we sort of determine who gets elected. Some people's vote count more than others, like in our system, right? Mm-hmm. But we have zero control over who those elected representatives decide to choose or replace at any given time as a head of government. You know, basically, once they're in power, they can choose whoever they want. We have absolutely nothing to do with it. And then in the last day or two, we suddenly see we have, it's strikingly clear and worrying that even the elected representatives that we choose maybe do not have the power themselves to indeterminately determine the head of government. Maybe they might send a name that they all agree on, but then another name comes back as Menteri Besar, something like that. So this is a very strange kind of set of affairs. Right. I think it's all currently an inherent feature of the Westminster script, and it's all perfectly legal. But it's problematic.
But why does this happen? Like you said, you can swap politicians around from this party, that party. We see a lot of defections, and it doesn't feel like, you know, there's this big difference, you know, because if your ideology is completely different from one party to another, you wouldn't be able to jump here and there. But, yet this happened. So why exactly do you think it has come to this?
Within the current culture and system of politics, within the current structures of politics, and within the existing major political parties, we are very unlikely to see major change, right? And why is this so? Like I said, it's systemic, it's the structure, it's the incentive structures, it's the cultural inertia. You know, things have always been done a certain way, you know, and when you get stuck in that way for long enough, it becomes very, very difficult to do things differently. Sometimes even if you want to, you know, even if like 20, 30, 40% of your people in your party kind of want to do things differently, but it's very hard. They can change within a certain range, but not change beyond that range because it becomes too uncomfortable. You're stuck within a certain solar system with certain gravitational forces. Right. Very difficult to escape that, right? You know, you mentioned ideology and things like that, you know, and basically ideology has zero role to play in Malaysian politics, I feel, right? It's mainly all about money, feudalism, loyalty, that kind of stuff. So all this, you know, ideology is interchangeable. It's not important. So I believe that, you know, if you want to talk about real meaningful change from Malaysia, I know I'm betting it's a shot in the dark, and then most people will think I'm crazy, but I'm betting that real meaningful and sustainable change will come from outside the current political players.
So what do you mean by that? What can regular Malaysians do?
Revolution, of course. Yes. Revolution. So when it comes to this idea of citizen action, right, what can we do? What can, you know, people outside of politics do? I think we must once again be conscious of the great Malaysian script, right? And in order to like avoid the sort of like previous common pitfalls. So according to the great Malaysian script, citizens who want to pursue change on a national scale traditionally have only two options available to them. A, you can get involved in a political party, or B, you can get involved in an NGO. All right. Now, each path traditionally is also very well defined by the script. And if you do politics, and the script says you must generally be completely obsessed with winning elections in order to be relevant. You must always promote yourself. You must always attack your opponents. Right? This is the culture of politics. Right? And once you go in, you basically get sucked into that gravitational field. And if you do the NGO route, according to the script, you must be forever, quote unquote, pure and aloof from politics. Always outside, never. It's like a religious thing. You must never contest. I'm NGO. I will not contest in politics. Right? And you always feel like I must stand on the outside and tell politicians what to do. Right? I stand on the outside, tell politicians on the inside what to do. Right? So what I have learned from being, you know, some 15 plus years in this space is that no politician cares, you know, gives a rat's behind what any NGO people tell them. They simply don't care. You know, an article you mentioned, I wrote about, you know, the cost-benefit calculus. So the cost-benefit calculus for politicians is basically, in almost all cases, totally different from our cost-benefit calculus as the rakyat, right? In order for a politician to succeed, they need to do whatever it takes to win elections, right? And that is the be-all and the end-all for most politicians, definitely not all, right? But most, right? And doing so usually involves being very, very cutthroat and, more importantly, being very, very, very focused on money, right? That's the game. So in our current script, you know, people who are good at playing the game have traditionally risen to the top. You know, those who are bad at playing the game tend to fall by the wayside. right? So most people who join politics eventually fall into this sphere of influence, this sort of like gravitational system, right? And they get sucked in by these gravitational forces. I think we've seen it happen many times. Right? So basically in conclusion, right? And ultimately departing from this script is probably A, the most important thing to do for Malaysia, and B, the hardest thing to do in Malaysia.
Like you mentioned, you know, this is the script that most politicians follow, and that is the system, right? They're all part of the system, but not all politicians, like you highlighted. I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on, let's say, because, you know, largely like a lot of what you're talking about reflects like the perhaps the two biggest parties in Malaysia, whether on the government side or the opposition side, two biggest coalitions, sorry. But what about parties like, let's say, Party Socialist Malaysia and all? Do they do what you are sort of talking about here, this idea that, you know, they are both activists and also politics, and they are not seemingly obsessed with winning elections in that sense?
Yeah, you mentioned Party Socialist Malaysia. You know, I don't agree with all of their ideology and all of their approaches and ideas, but I have great respect for those guys and great love. I've seen the work that they've done for the people for, you know, decades now, and you know, I can safely say they are one of the most sincere people in this space. Right. One of the top PSM leaders, a great friend, I hope he doesn't mind me sharing, but he told me this once, this story that I always remembered. You know, he said, you know, one of the voters, I think in one of the elections, you know, they came up to him where they were running, like in a Kawasan, in a constituency they were running, and they came up to him and said, you know, we love the work that you do. We like you guys. You know, we think you're great, right? But I don't think I'm going to vote for you because, you know, you guys are only running in just a few seats. And even if you win, what are you going to do? You're not going to form the government. You're not going to, you know, politically, it doesn't really make much difference if I vote for you, right? So, and you know, that sort of like, you know, so yeah, it got me thinking a lot. And I think that, you know, we want to be the kind of movement that I think Malaysia needs. In many ways, looks like PSM, but in some ways has to be a bit different from PSM, you know, or right. The kind of the approach of those smaller parties, right? So the scope and the sort of like a range of ambition probably needs to be a little bit bigger and a little bit more universal, a little bit more universal appeal. I mean, the PSM people tend to be very heavy ideologues. I think the only people who really care about ideology in Malaysia is PSM and PAS to some extent. The rest much less so, right? So that ideology can sometimes be a bit limiting, or you know, kind of like So I think the kind of movements that we need to be a little bit more wider scope in terms of like what they're planning to achieve, and of course, but to balance it carefully, striking a balance. That's the big challenge, as I mentioned.
On the show with me today is Nathaniel Tan. He's a columnist and part of hashtag Project Bangsa Malaysia. After the break, I ask him for his suggestions on nation building outside the current political system. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan. And on the show with me today is Nathaniel Tan. He's a columnist and part of the hashtag Project Bangsa Malaysia group. We are discussing this idea of nation building outside the political system and building bridges on the ground. So, Nat, how do we do nation building from outside the current political system, from outside the status quo and the script?
Thanks very much, Tesh. Now you're asking the really good and important questions, for sure. Real questions, right? And so here we can get a little bit more technical and operational, right? So obviously there needs to be a movement, right? So the question is, what kind of movement? You know, so established, you know, our current political parties and the way they're set up, the culture of the political parties, most big parties in Malaysia, by the way, are breakaway parties from UMNO, you know, one way or another over time, right? And most of those parties have a certain way of doing things, and it betrays its like parental origins. Anyway, so most political parties are too focused on trying to win elections at any cost. That's the problem, right? Whereas the good NGOs, usually they're too focused on, you know, being puritanically separate from politics. So what if we had a movement with the sincere drive and motivation and sort of like focus areas that found in NGOs, but one that is willing to contest elections, right? What if the primary day-to-day purpose of this movement was to improve the lives of the rakyat to work at the grassroots level on the ground, just like an NGO? Like, that's its primary purpose, We wake up every morning, we don't think, how are we going to win elections? We wake up every morning, think, how are we going to make someone's life better today? You know, how can we work in ways to like make sustainable, a change and improvement in people's lives, right? And have the possibility of contesting elections being a secondary tangential consideration, right? So again, we are focused on improving lives first, and then maybe later we think about contesting. First priority, improving lives. Second, thinking an idea, contesting, which again is a very, very different from current political parties, which we understand. I sometimes use the analogy that NGOs are a little bit like lifeboats. You know, they're focused on saving people, right? That's what they're built to do. Political parties are like warships, right? They're built to fight. That is their purpose. That is their raison d'être, right? Is their reason for being. So, but once you are a warship, then it is in your nature to fight. You don't go out, you're not built to do other things, you're built to fight. So they're always thinking, how to win elections, and so that's problematic. It becomes very fighting kind of people. Now, I'm sure, this idea of mine, many people, especially those within politics, they'll think, at best, they'll think this idea is naive, and at worst, they'll think this idea is incredibly stupid. But in a way, this approach, this idea of concentrate on doing on what work that can be done on the ground first, and then later only think about whether you want to contest, if you want to contest, right? How you're going to win and make that secondary. It reminds me of this advice where, some people say the best way to find a girlfriend or a boyfriend is to stop looking for one. The best way to find love is stop looking for love. Or, if you like Harry Potter, it's like how Dumbledore says, those who are best suited to power are those who have never sought it. Which, of course, is paradoxical, right? It's strange and weird, but... there is some wisdom in here, and you have to learn how to navigate and operationalize this line of thinking. Yeah.
And what would a movement like this look like on a day-to-day basis?
These are ideas that I'll be the first to admit is much easier said than done. But here's how we sort of think about this, right? So in our work with Project Bangsa Malaysia, which I must add and emphasize, has absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with the political party called Parti Bangsa Malaysia, which unfortunately shares the same name, but really has nothing to do with us absolutely whatsoever. It's the kind of opposite of everything we want to be. In Project Bangsa Malaysia, what we've tried to do, or one way we articulate our goals is to, we want to replace VIP politics that are built around very important people with a VIP democracy based on values, impact, and policy. That's our version of VIPs. So these are like the three sectors of work that I think we want to try and focus on. The first is about values, right? Of course, so we talk about Bangsa Malaysia. So we're talking about nationhood and nation building, as you mentioned, right? So nations are imagined communities, right? They are sort of like how we think of each other, how we think of ourselves. And a lot of nations have an ethos to them. Right? So if you're like your Americans, your ethos is all about we are freedom, we're freedom lovers, we are freedom fighters, right? I don't know, you're German, you're like you're great efficiency, you're great engineers. You're in Japan, you're like all about hard workers, right? So what is the Malaysian ethos? What is a Malaysian nation? I think this is something that has really never been well defined, right? And I think that a lot of problems can be traced back to that fact. Right. So, but in this crisis, there is an opportunity. If it hasn't been defined before, that means that we still, some of us have an opportunity to define it, to define, to sort of like help think about and define what it means to be Malaysian. Right. And now it doesn't make any, there's no value in like, oh, Nat or whoever, come down from on top and tell you, oh, this is what it means to be Malaysian. You all, the government try and tell you from a top down way what it means to be Malaysian. I think the only valuable way to like discuss what it means to be Malaysian is from the grassroots or from the bottom up, and to have discussions among the very, very diverse group of Malaysians. And we are an extremely diverse country now, right? To have, people like from very different backgrounds come together and sort of like, explore and identify what our common ground is. We may seem very different, but I think if we do enough patient work, we can find what those common ground values are, and based on input from everyone. So in this whole process, politicians not required. You don't need politicians to lead us to do this. We can do this work ourselves, right? So on the impact side, like I said earlier, we really want to be focused on having a real world impact on the ground, improve lives on the ground, and ideally to bring diverse groups of people together to make this happen together. Because to become a nation, we need to have joint projects. And what better joint projects than to Gotong Royong and improve people's lives? And again, to do this, politicians not required. Right? And our third one is policies, right? The vast majority of our current nation policies cater to the interests of the elites, not the interests of the rakyat. But we have more than enough brains in Malaysia to produce extremely smart, innovative, cutting-edge policies that would truly benefit all Malaysians. Now, implementing such policies, yes, we require you to be in government, but bringing those brains together to write those policies out, politicians also not required.
You are someone who works closely with the folks from even ABIM and all, which is Angkatan Belia Islam Malaysia. When y'all, I'm assuming, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that y'all have a lot of differences as well in how you, perhaps your personal ideologies and things like that, but yet y'all come together and work together. So when y'all have these discussions, how do y'all see Malaysia? To you, what does being Malaysian mean?
Yeah, I mean, that's an excellent question. I mean, I can answer this firstly on a personal level. I've thought about this and, you know, try and like explore this with many people for a long time. You know, and if it was up to me, you know, the things I think that the common values I think that we should, that I would love to see define us as Malaysian are things like compassion, you know, our love for family, our love for, you know, spending time together, for helping one another. I mean, you wanna see what's the best encapsulation of Malaysianness? I mean, look at kita jaga kita lah, right? Every time there's a problem, right, and people are like, oh, the government is not doing anything. You don't need the government to do anything. We help each other. You know, we saw this very clearly in the first MCO. We see it very much in the floods. Right now, when you know, the government or authorities are slow and, you know, they're not doing, or they're caught up in bureaucracy and politics, Malaysians are like, you know, I'm going to come out and I'm going to do everything I can to help everyone I can, right? And then they do this, you know, there's so many organizations in Malaysia, so many people out there doing great work, right? You know, I think the gap, so to speak, is that, you know, a lot of this work happens here in silos. We do it separately for one another because, again, we are range bound, right? We tend to stick to our comfort zones, to people who talk like us, think like us, you know, things like that, right? So this is, I mean, trying to solve this problem was one of the main reasons I tried to, you know, reach out a little bit to people like ABIM. I got to know about 2 years ago, and it's been an incredible experience, you know. Yeah, of course, we're different in many ways, but I think of ABIM as being very similar to me. When I think of diverse different Malaysians, there are other people I think of. Some people who talk, grew up like me, who are more different than me, than I feel like ABIM people, you know, to me, you know. So it's, you know, I think it's been really inspiring to work with them and be exposed to the kind of work that they do, right? You know, so in their own efforts to reach out from beyond their comfort zones and to network and engage with people who are different from them, you know. And I think this is the most important thing. This is the core of the process. And if we keep doing that, we will discover more and more common ground, more and more Malaysians who really just want the best for our country, who want the country to fulfill our potential. I think that's one of the most frustrating things to see for most Malaysians, right? You see, like, this country could be a million times better than what it is, right? You know, it's just how do we get there? So, you know, I think at the moment, I mean, that is kind of Malaysianness, frustration at, you know, our inability to fulfill our potential, right? That's what being Malaysian is to an extent, right? But yeah, you know, I think eventually when I've talked to all of these people, when I talk to these different groups, you know, Chinese educationists, people from Sabah, Sarawak, I think that's the common ground. You know, we're really sincere in wanting to see a better Malaysia for everybody in it.
Malaysia's mainstream political landscape is dominated by career politicians. We rarely see people from NGOs or just civil society who slowly garner their grassroots support first and then only run an election. I'm not saying they don't exist. I mean, even the likes of Anwar Ibrahim started off as a student activist. But it does seem like when they enter the arena of mainstream politics, or the longer they stay in the arena, there is a growing detachment from the ground. Why is this so? And do you see it as a problem?
That's really fascinating, Adesh. You know, when you talk about this kind of people, I think of like YB Mariachin Abdullah. The last elections only go from NGO to political party, but that's such a fascinating thing that you point out, right? That Anwar Ibrahim also walked that path. I mean, granted, this is like, I don't know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, right? But that's exactly right. You know, he used to be, I mean, you know, he's one of the co-founders of ABIM, and, you know, he's
right.
leader, all this kind of thing. But yeah, you know, it's, I mean, and of course, these are sort of like 3 years ago, but and 50 years ago. For me, I saw a lot of these things about, again, 15 plus years ago. And when a lot of, I grew up with a lot of people who are NGO and basically also entered into politics, right? And I got to see some of that kind of like up close and personal. And yeah, it's not, the results are not great. You know, I mean, if you ask me why, the very simple reason is, I mean, you know, currently up to date, we don't really have many NGOs transitioning to sort of coexisting as a political movement. A lot of NGOs have a de facto political wing, not as a simple one-to-one relationship as in other countries, but you know, some people here have, right? There is a affiliate political party in a way. But the most dominant parties are pre-established political parties, right? And again, I come back to the ship analogy, the naval craft analogy, right? So NGOs are generally built as lifeboats. So when your lifeboat is hard to transition to, suddenly you can't put cannons on a lifeboat now. You can't put missiles and all that. It's not easy to do, right? So it's not easy for NGOs to transition that way. And so what they do is that they join, most of them end up joining a political party. They end up becoming members and then end up going into that system. And once you do that, you've transferred from your lifeboat to a warship. And on a warship, you have to follow the warship culture. You get sucked in by the warship culture. You are just one lifeboat guy in a boat full of naval warriors. I mean, you know, it doesn't really work. Or you go, what I've seen happen is they go in one by one. One by one, they go in and they think they're going to try and, you know, basically they go in, they try and change politics, but most often politics changes them. It's not a reflection or a judgment on them saying, oh, they are bad people or whatever. No. But that's what happens. They get sucked in by the culture, right? And again, the established culture is very, very difficult to change. It's very entrenched. And in the case of our political parties in particular, there's basically a lot of money involved, because government politics, money is deeply intertwined. And when you have that much money, it is a huge center of gravity that you can't just like shift around, change things like that, just like that. So I think the only way you sort of like have an alternative to the system is that you have to build something from outside of politics. You don't. I think this idea of like I'll go in and change on the inside thing, I think empirically doesn't really work. You know, not for lack of good people, not for lack of trying, but it doesn't work, right? That's my personal analysis, right? But if you build something that is fresh and new from the outside, maybe you have a chance. You know, you have to build those kind of bonds. You have to identify those values and ideology. You have to be serious about ideology, not fake about ideology like most guys, right? You have to be serious about that. I mean, the other pitfall, right, is that if you just sort of like launch a political party, I think you run into a bunch of problems as well. Again, because, you know, if you say political party, that alone, you already sort of like, it comes with baggage. It comes with a certain mold, right? Certain idea of how you should do things. And again, you can come with the best of intentions, right? But if you don't put in a lot of work and a lot of difficult work that most people find too boring and time consuming to do, you know, you just end up following the mold of other political parties. Following the mold, you end up structured like them. That one, never mind. You end up following their culture. Most importantly, is this worship culture. You find that everyone in politics, right, they love to fight with one another. And this is the worst and most boring. I mean, this is a key feature of our politics. Our politics is adversarial, confrontational, zero-sum game. Right? Whereas democracy, what democracy should be, is a collaborative consensus building process. Voting should be the last part, the final result of a democratic process, not the first part where most people think, right? So I think just starting another political party, quote unquote, like that is not the answer either, because you tend to go down a certain path, which I think we're already seeing in some cases, right? So I think you need to build a really different type of movement from the ground up in the very slow, painstaking, difficult way. Only then you'll have built something sort of like sustainable and interesting. Yeah, and it has to be built based on real bonds between people. Not basically, it's a slow cooked marinade, not a Maggie meal. Yeah.
Right. And another part, the Malaysian political landscape has sort of went down on from the dawn of time, Malaysian history until, and it still continues today, is this idea of personality politics. I want to get your thoughts on personality politics. Does it prevent genuine grassroots building? Because you have repeated yourself that, you know, many Malaysian politicians, it's all about winning elections. And that even comes, we have a constituency kind of system right now. But even then you have, you know, politicians contesting in different constituencies when it, you know, at different elections, it's everything is strategy. It's like, okay, I'm a big star, I can go to these challenging seats, compete here, although I've never served the people in this constituency before, and so on and so forth. And it's not just a one side of the aisle problem. Both sides do it, both sides strategize these ways and all of that. Do you have any thoughts on personality politics and the consequences of reducing politics to just these personalities and big names and leaders?
I think it's easy. It's easy to like reduce politics to like who is the leader, which leader should we choose, right? We're conditioned to think that way. We're conditioned that democracy means choosing a leader to represent us and to lead us. That's all we think democracy is. And then once we choose, then it's their responsibility. And then all of us sit in kopitiam and WhatsApp groups and like, this guy doing bad, that guy doing bad, this guy better, that guy worse. I mean, it's easy, right? We sort of just, it focuses the debate. And people like simple debates, right? I mean, that's natural. We're conditioned to think like that. It's all about which leader. If we have the right leader, everything is good. If we have the wrong leader, everything is bad. And if you like the same leader as me, we are friends. If you like a different leader than me, we are enemies. I mean, this is nonsense. I get it. You know, it's normal. That's how we grew up in a way. But if you think about it, it's nonsense, right? But it's the culture. So this is the easy way. The difficult way, the better way is usually the more difficult way, right? The more difficult way is to kind of like think about, you know, not who is in charge and, you know, to think of leaders as interchangeable and replaceable, but, you know, what our process is, what our decision-making process is, what our democratic engagement process is, right? And to sort of like build a culture where, you know, it's not about who the leader is, When you're talking about, you know, personalities and leaders, you know, I think this question kind of boils down a little bit to what is Malaysia about, right? Is Malaysia about Anwar, Mahathir, Najib, or is it about us, right? You know, is Malaysia about who we are? Again, you know, when we get so caught up about this fighting over personalities, you know, it becomes very feudalistic and tends to be very polarizing, right? It tends to be your guy or my guy, right? That kind of question. So, you know, we can have to really think again and not take this shortcut to thinking like, oh, it's all about, we just have to choose the right leader. It doesn't stop there.
How do we build bridges? Because earlier you talked about your friendship and your working relationship now with the likes of Abim, who many people in our circles, right, they may just look at Abim and think, oh, these guys are very different. They are completely polar opposites from who we are. But it's not necessarily the case. You brought up an interesting point about how you've actually found more similarities between you and them than some of your, you know, other friends that are part of your quote-unquote circle. How do you build bridges? And what do you think people are not understanding about this idea of building bridges or not willing to do?
You know, you're touching on one of the subjects I'm most passionate about, building bridges, right? I think the short answer is how to build bridges. The short answer is the hard way. The easy way in Malaysia, right, means you just talk among people who already agree with you. You know, so we all hope the internet will bring everyone together, but it turns out the internet is really good for creating echo chambers. Right? People who agree with us, people who grew up like us, people who talk the same language, have the same views, you know, like the same things. It's natural, normal, to want to always stay within these groups, right? But if we are really, really talking about a better Malaysia, talking about Malaysia where we really fulfill our potential, the biggest thing we need to do is to talk to people that we don't usually talk to, right? And it seems a little bit scary at first, seem a bit uncomfortable at first, but speaking from experience, really, it's not that bad. After a while, you know, you find it's really, these people are not as scary as you think. You know, so again, in Malaysia, we have many groups, right? We have got Islamists, we've got Chinese educationists, we've got LGBTs, we've got Sabah, Sarawak, secessionists, you know, all macam-macam lah. Various end of the spectrum, right? Super liberal, super conservative, semua pun ada, macam-macam ada, right? So organizing discussions between these people, very difficult, very challenging. But also very rewarding, very fun, right? In those days, everything is about kopitiam conversations, right? The modern equivalent is WhatsApp groups. you're kind enough to let me stuff you into one of our WhatsApp groups. And, you know, so kind of places that we try to have some of those conversations, right. Try to those bridges, you know, slowly, slowly. But eventually, of course, it has to do with face-to-face conversations. Mm. How many Milos you drink together, lah. That's how you real. That's, the relationship must be real. It must be personal and it must be human. You must really be able to make that human connection. And all these other big structural ideas kind of thing, all that is all one, just some distant far. I think the real basis of a real, you know, next generation Malaysia is built totally on human relationships. Right? And the kind of people that are good at building these kind of relationships, good at building, you know, those kind of bridges, you know, it requires a totally different skill set than what you have from current politicians. Now. So our political system tends to reward the fighters. We love to cheer on the people who are great at drama. The kind of people that are good consensus builders, good facilitators, good, you know, bridge builders, you tend to hear less of them about. Now. That's why, you know, ABIM, not the most famous of organizations. The work that they do is kind of like low key, you know, is down to earth. They're not people who yell about what they do, which is a bit of a tragedy, right? You know, so the real good work that's being done, people don't get not easy to get excited about it. I mean, we're working on that. We're trying to put a better spin on it, as it were. But that's a natural evolution, and we tend to gravitate towards the fighters, right? So I think, but. There's a way to find a balance, you know, to be reasonably high profile, but also to do the work that matters, regardless of the glory. Yeah.
On that note, thank you so much for joining me today, Nat.
Thank you so much, Dash. All the best.
That was Nathaniel Tan. He's a columnist and part of the group Project Bangsa Malaysia. If you missed any part of our conversation, you can check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcast from. I'm Dashran Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.